President Bush launched a European tour this past week. Among the noteworthy aspects of the early days, something was missing. The huge protests. Well, it could be that President Bush's stances have recently inched closer to Europe, showcasing a more cooperative attitude from the U.S., or it could be that those in the community, in the global community, are already looking past President Bush to the next commander-in-chief and pinning their hopes on him. Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert. Glad to be with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. In Europe, it's pretty clear who the favorite candidate is for the job. And international polling shows that positive attitudes towards Americans are on the rise after falling for several years. This hour, we'll get the view from abroad and find out how America looks to the rest of the world. Our guests today are Stephen Cull, the director of worldpublicopinion.org and the Program on International Policy Attitudes. He directs PIPA and the Knowledge Network's poll of the U.S. public, which plays a central role in the BBC World Service poll of global opinion. We'll be hearing about that this hour. Also joining us, John Glenn, who's director of foreign policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. I hope you'll be joining us as well this hour. Do you think the upcoming election will help the U.S. gain some capital abroad? And just how important is it that we do so? Also, should public perceptions abroad influence American politics? Call us with your thoughts at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Stephen Cull and John Glenn, I'm so glad you could talk to us this morning.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with you, John. President Bush is abroad touring this week, but early on, especially without the protests, what's going on here?
Well, this is the last visit by President Bush to Europe of his presidency, by all accounts. And I think what we're seeing here really reflects sort of the evolution that we've seen in his presidency. It's one that began following 9/11 with just perhaps the greatest crisis in U.S.-European relations we've seen in decades over the war in Iraq. And that has continued to shape how people see him and how people think about the United States. But really, in the second term, the temperature on these things has gone down quite a bit. The president made a fairly substantial effort to reach out to European policymakers. He's been greeted by new European leaders, such as the new German Chancellor Merkel, the new French President Sarkozy, who are much more inclined to close relations with the United States. And instead of focusing on the hot-button issues like Iraq, they've agreed to focus on a different agenda, a global agenda that talks about trade, that talks about climate change, that talks about cooperation on Afghanistan, and on the efforts that we have working with Europeans on trying to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. So it's a little bit more grounded, a little bit less sort of dramatic, and I think that's what we're seeing with the president abroad now.
So it sounds as though President Bush has really pulled back from trying to go it alone and kind of in-your-face attitude that we can get by on our own, but he's really trying to mend fences and maybe build bridges.
It's been an effort. Sometimes the way I think about it is on Iraq, we've had kind of a gentleman's agreement. The United States has agreed not to ask too much from Europe about Iraq, and Europeans have agreed not to criticize us too loudly over the decision to go into Iraq. And so there's a real effort on that, and I think at the level of the policymakers, the sort of the presidents and chancellors that I mentioned, it's largely succeeded. But at the level of the public, the views of the United States under President Bush have been stubbornly critical in recent years.
Well, you've said on your blog that the upcoming U.S. election could, and these are your words, do more to improve the image of the United States than any public diplomacy effort could ever hope for. Can you explain kind of what you mean by that?
This has been one of the most interesting things, and Stephen will probably have something to say about this as well, but even before the election, new polls that we've seen have already shown an uptick in views of the United States, sometimes somewhat modest, sometimes more striking. And it seems that we know that Europeans and other parts of the world, indeed, are paying really closely to the presidential election. And you have the sense that the dynamics of watching a very sort of vigorous, dynamic presidential election campaign on the side, both sides of the political aisle, the Democrats electing Barack Obama, and if they hadn't, the first woman candidate, Hillary Clinton, has really done a lot in the eyes of many parts of the world to remind them of the diversity of the United States and the vitality of our democratic system. And so even without dramatic policy changes at the level of the administration, even without a new face in the White House, it sounds like people are paying attention and that things are actually changing about the United States.
Well, Stephen Cull, you're with worldpublicopinion.org and the Program on International Policy Attitudes. And the polling you've participated in is showing that for the first time in several years, public opinion abroad of the U.S. is actually on the upswing. Can you tell us what you found?
That's right. It's modest on average across the various countries that we polled. 23 countries. There was an average of 4 points of higher in positive attitudes, but still, that's a movement from 31% to 35% positive on average. The question was whether the United States is having a positive or negative influence in the world. But there were some countries that showed rather significant changes. For example, France went from 69% negative to 51% negative. And Portugal, that had been predominantly negative, is now leaning positive. So we do see signs, and I do think that it is, to some extent, related to changes in the president, slight shifts in regard to the climate change issue, some of the efforts related to the Israel-Palestinian conflict with the Annapolis Conference and so on. So there is some change in tone, but I do think that the dominant movement is driven by the people around the world looking beyond the Bush administration and seeing some new faces that look somewhat more attractive. I think it is related to the potentials of changes in U.S. foreign policy, particularly in regard to cooperation with other countries and a less emphasis on a unilateralist approach. Both John McCain and Barack Obama have talked about a more cooperative approach, a more multilateral approach. Both of them have also expressed concern about climate change and a greater readiness to have the U.S. commit to limits on greenhouse gas emissions. And those, I think, are all contributing to a kind of hopefulness that things could get on a better track between the U.S. and the rest of the world.
So do you think there's greater interest now in what the U.S. is doing than in past elections?
Well, I think we don't have really well-developed trend lines on this, but the numbers are rather impressive, the extent to which people are paying attention. And I think that there is an anticipation that this could, a new administration could signal a real change. It is important to remember that before the Bush administration, attitudes toward the U.S. were considerably more positive. This is not, this negative view of the U.S. is not something that's just been a perennial. People have the idea that the U.S. is so powerful and rich that everybody's jealous of it, and so that's just some kind of intrinsic negative attitude people have. But that's not really true. In the 90s, for example, attitudes were fairly positive. So it's really a question of publics coming back to a more normal relationship with the United States, and some anticipation that this could happen, and some hopefulness.
Well, you guys have mentioned the face that Senator Obama puts on America, and for that matter, Hillary Clinton, a different sort of take that seems to indicate America is interested in more progressive politics. And I know there's been some polling already on who Europeans would elect if they were the ones writing out their ballots. Can you tell us what that is, what those results have been?
Well, the numbers have been from a number of sources, including from the Pew poll that was just released, a strong preference for Obama over McCain throughout the world. There are a few countries where that's not so strong, but it's that's definitely the preferred candidate. It's not that McCain has a negative image. He doesn't, but Obama is more popular.
It's amazing when you read the European press and other places, the expression you hear is that there is Obama mania in Europe right now.
Well, that's so interesting because you wonder what sort of effect that's going to have on the elections here, if anything. Do you think Americans are going to care that, you know, Europe is really hopped up about Barack Obama? Or will there be a backlash? You know, we don't like to be told what to do in this country. And if Europeans are saying, elect this guy, maybe everyone else will go for the other guy.
That's funny. If I may, it's I think that Americans will be probably not paying that much attention to what the rest of the world thinks about the two candidates there. But it does lead us to an interesting place of about the question of coming expectations. You know, the rest of the world is emphasizing change with a new face in the White House, which indeed, you know, we at home are talking about change. But I think that there's the danger at some level that I want to put on the table that we be careful about the nature of our expectations. I think the new president who comes in will probably face the greatest challenge in managing expectations of what that change will be. I mean, I think Europeans at least are expecting to sort of see a dramatic change in policies, and yet I'm not so sure that there aren't fairly significant constraints on any new president, be it President McCain, be it President Obama. They're facing a lot of tough challenges that are fairly intractable and that are going to call for a lot of global cooperation. But I think the danger would be that Europeans would suddenly expect Americans overnight to turn into sort of multilateralists who wish to work all of our policies through the United Nations.
Right.
And we, on the other hand, would expect Europeans to suddenly, you know, procure all sorts of troops that they could send out to help us pursue our foreign policy goals. And neither of those visions are likely to be true. So I think we have to take a kind of more sober, more nuanced attitude to the how, you know, what's likely to come in the future.
If you look at what you're reading about, you know, Obama mania in the foreign presses, and, you know, the fact that Obama or McCain, there's going to be tremendous political pressure once that person gets into office. It seems as though at least the outlook on Obama seems like a bit of a fairy tale read, and you have to wonder if that's not setting up Obama or McCain for a fall later on, at least in opinion.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's really right, and I think that's part of why we need to do a good job now, before an administration comes, before the election comes, at sort of, you know, allowing ourselves to get excited, but at the same time reminding ourselves of what the common challenges we're facing are. I mean, if you think about it in the foreign policy sphere, I mean, preventing Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons has no easy options, and it's not sort of like the current administration has been ignoring the easy option that could fix that. Dealing with, you know, a sort of decline in democracy and a rise in authoritarianism in Russia has no easy answer, let alone what we do in Afghanistan and Iraq. And so I think that the new president's going to be facing a very challenging agenda. And I would personally be delighted if the rest of the world were to turn to, you know, a new face in the White House and say, okay, let's sit down again and let's see what we can't do together. But I think they really have to be more realistic, at the very least, at sort of what's possible and what the next steps are. I think the next steps of change are likely to be, at least at the beginning, somewhat incremental.
Well, and Stephen, you found that the world doesn't want the U.S. to be the global policeman. They don't want that role anymore. They want a multilateral approach. How likely do you think they are to get that?
I think that there's that with either candidate, McCain or Obama, you will see a shift to a more cooperative approach. I think of what's going on here is that in the post-World War II period, the United States took the lead in establishing a kind of world order based on international systems, international law, international cooperation, free trade, human rights, democracy, and so on. And the world pretty much embraced that vision, particularly after the end of the Cold War. There was a real consensus. And that's a kind of chord that resonates throughout the world. And over the last years, there has been a perception that the U.S. has departed from that. And as soon as the U.S. is perceived as some way coming back to that, there is going to be some sense of, okay, now we're together again, now we're working together again. There will be some potential for expectations that are unrealistic, but the main thing is a sense of a kind of cohesiveness, a kind of shared vision. There was a lot of concern that the United States was unconstrained now, that the U.S. was not, it had so much more power than other countries, and that it might use it in a way that wasn't consistent with the rules of the game that had been established in the post-war period. That's why there was so much concern about the U.S. going to war with Iraq without U.N. approval, that now the U.S. perceived that it had it was legitimate for the U.S. to use power in a unilateral way against another country other than in clear self-defense. So there was a lot of nervousness that the U.S. was in a sense out of control. What people will be looking for are indications that the U.S. is accepting the constraints of the international system, that the U.S. won't use its overwhelming power in a way that pushes others around and is not respectful of the sovereignty of other countries.
We're talking this hour with John Glenn, who is Director of Foreign Policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and Stephen Kull, who is Director of WorldPublicOpinion.org and the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland. Talking about how the U.S. is perceived abroad, positive attitudes are on the upswing. They've been in a downward trend in recent years, so that's a change. And we're also seeing, as we were talking about, Obama mania abroad. And we're wondering what effect that is going to have on the coming elections. Well, I hope you'll call in this hour as well. Are you excited about getting back on good footing with our neighbors in the global community? Or do you think that we should maybe keep going it alone, at least decide as far as the elections go, not be influenced by what other people are thinking and who Europeans want us to elect for president? Should we care? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's still a lot to look forward to here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 12:30, join us for Chapter a Day as Carl Schmid reads from Never Surrender, a novel of Winston Churchill by Michael Dobbs. It examines three crucial weeks in 1940. This hour, we're talking about foreign polling abroad, and taking a look at the trend that the United States is seen in a more positive light than it has been in recent years. Also talking about the Obama mania that has been sweeping parts of Europe. If Obama were to be running against John McCain now, he would win by something of a landslide. Tell us what you think about that. Are you happy that the United States might be getting back on better footing with its neighbors in the global community? There were lots of people who said that we had squandered our chances for that sort of affection after 9/11. Is this our chance to get it back, and should it matter to us? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. We're talking with guest John K. Glenn, Director of Foreign Policy at the German Marshall Fund of the U.S., and also Stephen Kull, Director of WorldPublicOpinion.org and the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland. And let's go take a phone call now. We've got Patricia on the line from Baraboo. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning.
Morning.
My feeling about the international community is I want to feel good about our relationship with the international community. I would never vote for a candidate because another community like them, but I do love the idea that they're being positive about Barack. And, you know, his mother, is my understanding, has a studied cultural anthropology and traveled around the world. So he brings with him this breath of fresh air in terms of, I believe, his vision of people in other countries. So I'm very supportive of Barack, and one of the reasons I am so is because I think he can bring this view to the world. And we are a global community. We're not an island on ourselves. And as time goes on, this is going to be clearer and clearer.
Has it bothered you in past years to have the U.S. slipping in public opinion abroad?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. Not because I need this big image for myself, but because we are a global community. And I don't, you know, I think we all have things to offer each other. And I don't like judging other countries. I think we have a lot we need to grow ourselves and in how we're viewing the world. And, you know, I mean, here we sit in Baraboo with rivers overflowing, and I personally, maybe it's a fluky year, but I think it could be due to climate change. And we have to, you know, I would love to be a leader in the world community in terms of our goodness, the things that we can bring, but the whole world has something to give.
Well, thanks so much for your call, Patricia. We appreciate it, and good luck getting out of the water there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And Stephen Kull, do you want to respond to Patricia's comments there?
I would say her view is somewhat typical. Americans are aware that there has been a problem in America's relations with the rest of the world, and it has concerned. There is this idea that if Americans know that others have a negative attitude toward us or want a particular candidate, they react in a contrary fashion. And that really isn't the case. They they respond with some concern if there's a problem, and if there's a candidate that is more attractive, I don't think that's going to determine their vote, just as the caller said, but that is seen as a plus, not a minus.
And John Glenn?
I think she raised one of the issues of climate there that highlights something that Stephen was starting to suggest before the break. In the, you know, the post-Cold War period, Stephen talked about how people were concerned about the United States as the sort of sole superpower, what it would do in the world and the way that it would act. And I think that the thing that we've seen in recent years has been a realization that, indeed, we are the sole superpower, especially from a military standpoint, but that there are some problems that don't necessarily have military solutions, and that we as the United States are looking for partners because there are allies who can help us do what we need to do. And climate change is one of those sort of key things. It's not, of course, I wouldn't want to suggest the military didn't have a role. I'm thinking about the very positive role that the U.S. military played after the tsunami and some of the relief efforts in the Pacific. But I think that we know that there are a number of problems there that we need the support of others and the resources of others.
Well, going back to the reality check, you know, Patricia was talking about climate change, and the U.S. has been slammed by other leaders abroad for its reluctance to participate and take a leadership role in fighting climate change and addressing it. And I wonder how realistic it is to expect either John McCain or Barack Obama to address that, given the sickly state of the American economy right now.
You know, it's an interesting challenge. I think that, you know, I get asked about occasionally whether John McCain or Barack Obama would sign the Kyoto Treaty on climate change that we didn't sign, or President Bush unsigned, actually, in the early part of his term. And I think, you know, the answer to that is certainly no. It's where the United States is on climate change is much more sort of forward-looking. And I think what we're trying to do is to come up with a new post-Kyoto system, a new post-Kyoto accord for how we'll manage climate change and carbon trading. And what's interesting is that this is the context that we'll be doing so, because right now the plan is to try and do so at a meeting in Copenhagen by the end of 2009, will be a context of economic downturn, a context in which people are worried about the economy and which the prospects for growth that seem to be so exciting and so robust until recent years suddenly have brought into question. And so I think the environment, if you will, in which we're going to be thinking about climate change has shifted somewhat in recent times.
I do think that the focus will be post Kyoto, the new treaty that will be put in place after Kyoto. I think that both with McCain and Obama, you will see some movement toward the United States making commitments to limit its emissions. Right now, the United States has made no such commitments, and that's the essence of the Kyoto Treaty. McCain was a co-sponsor of the McCain-Lieberman legislation, which was one of the most forward-looking pieces of legislation on climate change in the United States, which did not pass. So we will see, I think. We do see also in polls the American people feel that we're really not doing enough, and they express a willingness to accept higher costs for energy and so on, even when you put it in very concrete terms. Even you ask about how many dollars a month are you willing to pay more so as to address climate change, and people say significant numbers, $15 to $25 a month. So I think you will see, even with the state of the economy, a readiness to take some significant steps.
Let's go back to the phones now. Let's pick up another caller. We've got Salman calling from Appleton. Hello, Salman. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. You know, my comment is very similar. I think what we need now is a person like Barack Obama, who's of a younger generation, because these are the guys who are going to handle it for the future. And we need a peaceful way of resolving a lot of these conflicts that have been started. And I really believe a lot of them can be resolved if there's dialogue and communication. So I think the world is hoping for a good change.
Well, and from some of the things I'm hearing, a lot of the people abroad who are responding so favorably to Obama, part of it is his multi-ethnic background, but part of it
right.
is the way he speaks his oration.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the nature of the world today, you know, where the young generation is very, very diverse in its ethnicity. And it's very hard for older generation to understand that.
Well, thanks so much for the call, Salman. And Stephen Cull, what do you think about that? Is that indicative of what you're seeing in what lots of people are saying?
Do have the view that the world is becoming more interconnected, that and they see that as basically a positive process. And so these connections with different cultures and so on, it's the future. And in some way, I think Barack Obama is something of a symbol of that, and that's something of his attraction. There are some people who do react negatively to it, but it's a minority. Overall, it's a positive aspect of Barack Obama. There are things about the process of globalization, trade, outsourcing, companies going overseas, and things like that that are of course threatening to many Americans. But in the end, they say it is an inevitable process. They do want help in adapting to the changes, and they're looking to the government to do more to help people who suffer as a result of the process of globalization and trade. But in the end, they say it does need to happen, and ultimately, it's something positive.
Well, we've been talking about Obama because of, you know, the Obama mania abroad. But what if John McCain gets elected? Are we going to see a recoiling from our neighbors in the global community? Are we going to see some disappointment there? Or are people just going to pick up, dust themselves off and say, okay, maybe this guy will do what we want to do as well?
I think it'll be more of an open question there. There are a lot of things that McCain has already said that are of a positive nature from the point of view of the international community. He's made it clear that he plans to act in a more cooperative fashion, to emphasize more multilateral institutions, that he would take action on climate change. His approach to dealing with terrorism suspects, detainees, as in Guantanamo, is quite different. He would be align more closely with the Geneva Conventions. So on a whole series of points that are of significant concern to the international community, has already signaled a shift. Obama comes with not just a set of policies, but a certain tone and a certain inclusiveness and a certain international quality that's quite attractive. But on many key points, McCain would be attractive as well.
And John Glenn, what do you think?
It's interesting. Both candidates, the way that we see the image of the United States showing up in their policy platforms and in their statements has to do with a phrase that'll sound like either mending America's image in the world or restoring America's standing in the world. And you hear that from John McCain and from Barack Obama, and I think Stephen's absolutely right on a number of the sort of signature issues, climate change, detainees. I think John McCain has values and has made very clear statements that will be very different from the previous administration and that I think will be very well received. I think the challenge for him will be to articulate his policies on Iraq, and I think that will be his challenge at home as well as abroad. I think that there are those who associate him with those policies, and he has said himself that this has got to be his challenge. He's got to explain why his policies on Iraq are the right policies, and I think that that's true as well abroad. And the second area would be the area of Russia. There you see somewhat of a, you know, you see both candidates being stricter, more concerned about the developments in Russia, more concerned about what seems to be a rising authoritarianism in Russia. But John McCain has perhaps had the stronger of the two views. He's very clear about his concerns about that. And I think that is another issue that will be that could be challenging abroad, because Russia has emerged as a very powerful energy supplier to a lot of parts of the world, and people are concerned about how they would balance their relationships with them. And so I think that you know, I guess I'd see it on balance. I think both candidates move us forward in thinking about how to restore America's standing or credibility, you sometimes hear them say. And McCain has been as clear as anyone who ran for president about the importance of that. At the same time, there are other issues about how we'll deal with Iraq and how we deal with Iran or Russia.
Well, and it's still...
Yeah, I want to just echo that there, with McCain's position on Iraq. that points to some underlying questions that people around the world may have about his attitudes about the use of military force, whether the U.S. has the right to use military force in a unilateral way, his lack of questioning about whether what we did in Iraq was the right decision, does raise questions, and that is always a central concern when you have a single military power that's just overwhelmingly more powerful than any other country in the world.
Let's go back to the phones now. We've got Bob with us from Darlington. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think I've got an interesting point that would start to improve relations around the world with foreign countries greatly, probably more than we might know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the 5-4 decision to restore habeas corpus to the detainees at Guantanamo.
That would be a grand gesture. And you're thinking of that during the Bush presidency? Or moving on to the next president-elect?
Well, the thing is, I know it might be an off point, but yet I think that I don't know if McCain or Obama agrees with that decision, but yet I think it would go a long way without talking about the two presidential candidates that would restore our good feelings with foreign countries, because we're trying to follow the tenets of our original wonderful Constitution.
You know, Bob's point is actually really an interesting one about the ruling yesterday by the Supreme Court about Guantanamo, because Secretary Gates was asked about this, and he said, before he even said, you know, I haven't read it, I haven't heard all the details, which I'd really need to comment on it, his words were, Guantanamo has given the U.S. a black eye abroad. And I think that there's a sense that we do have that became a real symbol of the United States acting beyond the laws, operating a prison facility or a treatment detainee facility, you know, on Cuba, beyond our country's borders. And I think that there's going to be a lot of questions now about how we do that moving forward. I know that this result was lauded by the Obama campaign as another step in restoring our credibility as a nation that abides by the rule of law. And I know John McCain, from what I've read, has expressed, you know, the desire to close Guantanamo, had some questions about the Supreme Court ruling. But I think that Guantanamo Bay has become a symbol in a lot of ways. And Secretary Gates' comments about it being a black eye were very succinct about that.
And Stephen Call?
I would just echo that this is... we need to remember that America has been a symbol of the principle of the rule of law. And when the U.S. is perceived as not abiding by those principles, it weakens the rule of law around the world, and it raises questions in people's mind of, my goodness, America could do anything. If there are no rules constraining it, then people get very nervous. And then there's the idea that maybe what's going to come in its place is a real imperial power that dominates the world through its superior force. And but I think the kind of decision that occurred yesterday in the Supreme Court are just the kinds of signals that when they are sent out into the world, people breathe a little more easily.
Well, it is interesting because it seems as though the U.S. has a bit of a tightrope to walk in terms of how much leadership to take, because the world seems to want leadership and wants the United States to assume a leadership role. But on the other hand, they have to do it with a light hand and not seem to be doing it with a sort of Incredible Hulk style, as though we're big so we can do it.
Yeah, that's the kind of paradox of American power. In the post-World War II period, the U.S. had the capacity to be a traditional imperial power. But it didn't. It set up a system of international law, a system of international rules, a multilateral system that was designed to constrain the United States as well as other powers. And it said that it would live by that, and that created a lot of respect for the U.S. That creates a kind of leadership role for the U.S., but it also embeds the U.S. in it so that it's constrained by it. And that's a key factor. You know, one of the things that has come out of this whole period with U.S. really losing the position that it's had, and it has, you know, throughout these decades, it has continued to be a leader within that system that I described. Now we have other centers rising up, particularly in Europe, to some extent in China, and to some extent stepping in and being a little stronger. And I think that, in some way, as Americans like that. They have had the feeling that the U.S. has been so... They complain the U.S. is always out front so much. Why does everybody look to us so much? In focus groups, they always say, you know, we don't like being the world policeman. And in polls, 8 and 10 say we play the role of world policeman more than we should. And that's the feeling around the world, too. Large majorities around the world say the U.S. plays the role of world policeman more than it should. And so this has created some kind of shifting. There is no alternative power that has really stepped into the breach here. It's not that China or Europe or Russia is really an alternative world leader. But it has created a kind of shifting of energy so that the U.S. isn't quite so central. And maybe that's to the good.
We're talking this hour with John Glenn and Stephen Kull. Stephen Kull is director of worldpublicopinion.org and the program on international policy attitudes at the University of Maryland. And John Glenn is director of foreign policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States and director of the German Marshall Fund annual public opinion survey, Transatlantic Trends. We're considering what changes are taking place in the perception of the U.S. as it's seen abroad. Seems as though positive attitudes toward the U.S. are on the upswing. And, of course, there's great interest in the upcoming presidential election and what sort of role the U.S. is going to take as it interacts with the world in lots of different areas like climate change and the war in Iraq, trade, lots of areas there to be interested in. And we're wondering how important it is to you to have the U.S. restore its good standing in the world. As we've talked about, the word credibility has been tossed around. Are you ready for the U.S. to regain credibility? And how do you see the different candidates doing that? What steps do you take? And do you care whether the Europeans are in the throes of Obama mania? Is it going to influence your decision in the election? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. I've got open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along as well. Hope you'll stay with us next hour as we talk about the precarious financial lives of American families. Our guest says the economy isn't what it used to be. Education, savings, insurance, and prudent living are no longer a guarantee for financial security. And at 11 o'clock, Larry Mueller is talking native plants on today's Garden Talk. This hour, we're joined by Stephen Kull, director of worldopinion.org, and John Glenn, director of foreign policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, talking about how the U.S. is perceived abroad and whether it makes a difference to you. Well, Stephen and John, we've got some folks on the line waiting to talk. And in the meantime, we'll get to those in just a moment, but we've gotten a couple emails, one from a caller in Park Falls who says, a friend of mine from the Service and the Peace Corps is working in Africa for an NGO, and she wrote to me saying that the election of an American president whose father was born in Kenya will do more for our international standing in Africa, as well as other places, than almost anything else we could do. And that's a sentiment we've talked about already. We've seen what a difference the idea of putting a different-looking face on the United States could do. What do you think?
Our image in Africa is actually the region of the world that has been most consistently positive. Throughout this whole period, views have gone down some, but are still predominantly positive. And that, I think, is related to the history of America trying to be helpful in Africa, the aid programs that we've had there. And when they see an American company investing there, they see that as an unmitigated good for them. So the goodwill that we've generated through our aid programs has carried us through in Africa.
Well, let's take a call now. We've got Mary on the line calling from Janesville. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Veronica.
Morning.
You had asked if it was important for us to regain some of the ground that we lost through the Bush administration and our relationships with other countries, or in the opinions of those people from the other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And my opinion is a resounding yes. It's very, very important for us. We've been the leading superpower in the world for a very long time, and for us to have fallen so far in human rights issues and things of that nature in the eyes of the world, has done great damage to this country and to our relationship with other countries. So, yeah, we need to know. We need to know that something or someone is going to bring back. Well, maybe we need to change ourselves to bring back what we lost in the Bush administration.
And John Glenn?
I think that, you know, what she highlights is very much that sense about the United States as living up to its image of being a beacon for the rest of the world. And it's an interesting way that we think about ourselves, and I think that it's a very powerful way. And the sense that if we were not living up to our ideals, that the other parts of the world would look at us and say, well, I mean, why should I listen to you about supporting democracy abroad? Why should I be concerned about your expression that the human rights aren't defended in this country or my country over here? And I think that it's because of our role as a global superpower, it is sort of, I mean, it was incumbent on us to try to aspire to that. And I think that it's a very powerful thing. And I think that it does more than make people like us. I mean, I think everybody likes to be liked, but we understand there's some circumstances when they're doing the right thing may not always be being liked. But I think it has to do as well with gaining allies and supports for the kind of global challenges that we've got today. And this is the role that I think that's very powerful. When you squander the goodwill that others have towards you, but I share Stephen's point that I think in Africa this is one of the places where we've actually maintained that sense of goodwill, it becomes harder to do things abroad. It becomes harder for us to address common challenges such as climate change.
Stephen Call?
I've done focus groups around the world, and often when I start, we talk about America, and there's a lot of negativity that comes out. But before the end of the group, and particularly at the very end, there is this kind of surge of positive feeling that comes out, that they've been listened to, that they've been heard, and then you get this the desire that people have around the world to have a better relationship with the United States, that it's a feeling they express of being sort of like hurt that we had this relationship, and then you broke away, you didn't do what you said you were going to do, you let us down. But underneath that is we want to be back, we want to be connected again, we want to have a better relationship. So I think there is a kind of, it is important to remember that there is this underlying incipient longing around the world for a better relationship. So there, I think there really is a potential for this to shift. Now, as John was saying earlier, there are some fundamental policy issues that are not easy to resolve. So it's not that everything's going to go swimmingly, but I do think that the tone could shift rather quickly.
Well, it strikes me that it's an interesting situation because here in the States, I sense there's acute awareness that the United States has lost ground with credibility and standing abroad. And I'm not sure, you know, I haven't really seen that before, that people have been so aware of it. In fact, I don't know how many times I've come across jokes and travel tips saying, practice saying I am a Canadian if you're traveling abroad. And it seems to me that this is something I haven't seen before. Do you guys get that sense as well?
You know, it's interesting, I guess. Here's where, you know, a historical perspective can sometimes be useful, in that I think that this is indeed perhaps one of the deepest sort of periods that we've been in for a long time. But one can only has to think back to the war in Vietnam, when indeed the United States, the image of the United States was viewed very critical, and Americans abroad were viewed very critically. One can think about a number of other crisis moments, you know, among our allies that have taken place, be it in the 1980s, when President Reagan chose to deploy Pershing missiles to Germany, there were just incredible protests throughout Germany about this. Or thinking back to the Suez Crisis in the 1950s, with President Eisenhower. I mean, so in some ways, I think that it's not that we haven't had disagreements. It's not that there haven't been concerns about the United States in the past, but we've always been able to recover. And I think where we are right now is this very interesting phase in which we're seeing the initial signs. I like what Stephen said about the sort of the prospects for recovery or the potential for our image abroad to recover. And I think we're seeing signs that potential is there. And I think that it's all the more powerful in the current period because, you know, we talk about the United States as a global superpower in many ways, and it's a reasonable way to put it, especially when you think about military terms. On economic terms, we've got some real rivals. We're one among a number of people in economic terms, the European Union, for example. has an economy just about the size of the United States is. So it's not like we have a free hand to do as we will. I think that we benefit ourselves from a good relations abroad and from good cooperation on the issues we care about.
Let's take another call. We've got Imad on the line from Milwaukee. Hello.
Good morning. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a comment. It's not a question. Actually, as a young American, I would be in favor for a younger president because I believe young people, they speak about future. They have no past. And old people, they speak about the past because they have no future. And I will take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot, Imad. John Glenn?
It makes me think about, it's natural, of course, I think that young people would identify with younger candidate for president. And of course, there's a sense as well that, a young person is embodiment of the future. One can think back to Kennedy in 1960 when he was elected in a way that there was a sense that was a turn of a generation. I'm not sure that it's quite as simple as that, but I can certainly understand his feelings.
And speaking of Kennedy, a lot of people are kind of chomping at the bit, hoping that Obama does take a trip to Europe, hoping to see sort of a Kennedy-esque moment there. Have you thought about that much?
Well, we hear that in Germany. The talk about Barack Obama going to Europe immediately evoked in Germany the image of Kennedy standing in Berlin during the divided Berlin and talking about being a Berliner. And I think that Kennedy's been a very resonant image for close U.S. European relations, for turning a page, for a time when America was really looking forward. And admittedly, it's a little bit of an idealization. We had a lot of difficulties around then, such as the Cuban Missile Crisis, to name just one thing. But I think that evocation of a new generation is something you hear fairly widely.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Brian on the line from Green Bay. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. My question is, I was wondering if you knew of any studies that link our image around the world and the value of the American dollar.
Interesting question. And Stephen Cull, do you want to try to take that one?
I have not seen any correlation between those two things. I do think that there is evidence, though, that as America's image has gone down, that there are people who have avoided buying certain American products. Products that are particularly associated with the United States, like Marlboro cigarettes or McDonald's, and enough to have some kind of economic impact. This may also have an effect on readiness to invest in the U.S. if it carries over in other areas, and that could have some impact on the dollar.
And John Glenn, have you seen anything?
Well, the Pew survey that was released yesterday had some interesting data where it talked about concerns about a negative influence by the United States on the economy today. There's nothing as tightly linked as our caller raised, which would be fascinating, of course, if the value of the dollar really had such a direct result on it. But I think that when I think about the U.S. economic relationship, I think about the sort of dual face of globalization. On the one hand, there are products that are seen as sort of U.S. global imperialism, and one can think about the way people sometimes that a McDonald's might be attacked abroad during a particularly violent demonstration that is sort of as a symbol of the United States. And on the other hand, American popular culture is widely loved and embraced, and people watch American movies and television shows and wear jerseys of American basketball players. And so I think that in some ways it's sort of both ways. You see some things of a concern about the United States having such economic power. But on the other hand, everything that I've read and seen has suggested that the U.S. sort of cultural image, which is part of that economic power, is widely embraced.
We have time for one more call. We're down to about a minute here, so if you could keep it short. Thank you, Dave. Thanks from Dave in Milwaukee.
Hi. I just want to share a quick little story. I was over in Germany about 6 weeks after 9/11, and I was in a cafe, and a German person heard me speaking and asked me if I was American, and I said yes. And she threw her arms around me and was weeping, and she said to me, "I'm so sorry about what happened about 9/11, and that sentiment was worldwide, and I felt was squandered by the Bush administration.
Yes, there's no question that was a worldwide feeling, and there was a real sympathy, and the support for the United States going into Afghanistan was fully supported in the Security Council, and that was a key moment and shows you something about the potential for people around the world to have a very harmonious relationship with the U.S.
And John Glenn, your take?
I mean, there was one of the most striking things at that time was a headline in Le Monde, the French paper, that said, "We are all Americans." And to hear that at that time from the French was very, very, very powerful. And I think that that is a kind of a baseline, a sense that there was a larger we in the world at that time, a larger sense that it wasn't the U.S. alone, but it was the United States and sort of what it represented with our friends and allies abroad. It was a very difficult time. And I think that in some ways what we're doing these days is trying to restore that sense of who the we is in the world.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us this hour. It's been fascinating to talk about, and I'm sure an exciting time for both of you to keep an eye on as well.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with John Glenn, Director of Foreign Policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and Stephen Kull, Director of WorldPublicOpinion.org and the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland. I want to thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and Sarah Carroll for on-air production. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.